Welcome to Investor Resources with your hosts, Don Creech and Perry Sykes, who both realize that the market doesn't know what keeps you up at night. It doesn't know when you want to retire, and it doesn't know how old you are. The simple truth is, the market doesn't care. But if you care, then you've tuned in at the perfect time. You're listening to Investor Resources, bringing clarity to the confusing world of finance. Here are your hosts of Investor Resources, Don Creech and Perry Sykes.
Well, good afternoon. This is Don Creech.
And this is Perry Sykes. Welcome to the show, everyone.
So welcome to the Investor Resources live radio program. You have questions about what's going on in your portfolio and or the market. A lot of things to ask questions about on the market.
There's a couple out there, yeah.
Well, we have a live open call-in line at 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. So now's a good time to ask your question. A lot of shows this weekend are pre-recorded, and you don't get to ask. You just get to sit around and think, I wonder what he meant by that. Well, you can ask. And if you were on the webinar today and you didn't ask a question and you thought, I wonder what he meant about that, you can ask.
Do it now. Sure.
here's the number, 800-465-8770. Well, it has been a roller coaster of a ride for the last, let's say since December 1st.
Yeah, that covered, sure.
And up and down, up and down. You think things settle down, and all of a sudden it takes off again, and then it collapses. And we've expected bond prices to fall, but they're taking a much more dramatic dive than most people expected they would. We talked about the Bloomberg, Barclays Aggregate Bond Index this year, but basically they're pretty much the same.
Same thing, sure.
They are, they were down about 6% at the end of the quarter. Worst decline since 1980, but now, we're just a little over a month later, and they've almost doubled the loss. We finished Friday on a broad bond index. This is your safety valve if you have the standard balanced portfolio. This is your safety valve, is down virtually 3%, give or take 3 pennies. It's 10.97 to the negative. Your safety valve's down almost as much as the stock market is. The S&P has really been volatile. It's been bouncing around. It's down 11, then it's down 14, it's down 13, down 12. The bonds are almost as bad this year as owning stocks. How did that happen?
It's not supposed to. No one really. Well, we saw it coming. We were telling people this is going to come, and so many people are so dialed into that pie chart that it's like, well, my broker tells me just to hang in there. The bonds are the safe part of my portfolio. It'll all work out. And that is not happening, because the nature of the bond market has changed, and it's going to remain changed for an extended period of time.
And while I'm thinking about it, we have a big announcement here.
Speaking of changes, yeah.
That's right. June 4th. Well, we just wrapped up the seminar, the webinar for this month. Stock market update. The next one is going to happen on June 4th, the first Friday, or excuse me, the first Saturday of June. That's also going to be the time that we get our afternoons back. We are going to move from 3 o'clock to 11 in the morning on June 4th. So if you come in here on 3 o'clock in June and we're gone, it's just because we're already done. Our wives get the afternoon honey-do list back.
There we go.
Oh, I hadn't thought about that.
It's going to happen, though. You know it's going to happen. So.
Yeah, that it is. Anyway, June 4th, we're going to be 11 o'clock in the morning. We're looking forward to a morning time slot. But you want to talk to us today, it is 800-465-8770. Now, we're talking about stock market. We have said this for some time, that the stock market indexes do not represent what's happening in the market. Since about middle of 18, we started a business cycle transition, and then we got hit with COVID. With the business cycle, a lot of things that have been doing well for 20 or 30 years kind of find market saturation with their product and their services, and they're trying to figure out what do we do now. I mean, I think of Microsoft after the tech bubble collapsed. It took them about a decade and a half to figure out what do we do now that people don't buy our software packages anymore.
Like they used to, sure.
Yeah, like they used to in the olden days. And they finally developed their cloud computing business, which has been very profitable for them. And it's a highly profitable business, whoever's doing it, the big boys. But it took a long time to transition that. And that started for a lot of industries in the summer of 18. And then it was kind of spread with COVID. And not everybody's recovered from that yet. Now, the government, the Fed, pumped a lot of money into the market, and most of that money went into a handful of stocks that made the NASDAQ and the S&P 500 look like they were healthy. But the money wasn't going into the whole market. It was going into a select big companies. The rest of the market was really struggling and still is.
It's still, and like I said, Don, we've been telling people that for that's not new. It's been going on for a while now. We've been saying, you know, you got to look under the hood and take a peek at something besides that headline number, because there is so much weakness out there in so many different holdings that that's how you have to get the picture of how healthy is this market or not. And that's one of the reasons this one does, you know, feel so bad, is that the leadership is lost this time. All those large cap tech stocks that for the longest time you could not be without, you had to own them, they are taking significant hits. And we're talking about the FANG stocks. Those are all really getting whacked right now, and that hasn't happened for years.
Well, Amazon just had its worst day since 2006.
Oh, there you go.
Amazon. And who doesn't buy from Amazon?
Yeah, I mean, nobody I know doesn't buy from Amazon. Yeah,
as long as you have a credit card or a PayPal account, you're a potential customer for Amazon. But they just had a terrible day. I mean, they reported their quarterly earnings, and the earnings were actually up, but most of that was due to inflation. As far as counting the number of items that they shipped, they didn't ship any more last quarter than they did a year ago. That's not an increase in sales if you're not moving more product. But from a financial statement standpoint, they sold more money's worth, so sales went up, but not actual product out the door. And then with COVID, they built up a lot of extra distribution warehouses. And I spoke with one of my advisor contacts down in Waco, and he says, yeah, and they built one of those here in Waco just a couple of years ago. They just closed it down.
that's called overshooting. Yeah, they overshot. So they're ready for the next, you know, decade now as far as capacity goes, if it increases. But that outlay happened right now, and that's not, you know, when all of your costs go up but your sales stay flat and your expansion has grown, that's not good for the bottom line.
Well, it's labor too. Their labor, well, if you build those warehouses, you hire more people.
Hire the people, sure.
So they have they spent a lot of money, and it turns out it wasn't all well spent. And so the NASDAQ is down. That's had its worst month since the great financial crisis in 08 and 09. And it's got a facing a 22% drawdown. Yeah, it is 22.37 as of Friday. So the S&P is only off 13. That's relief. Mm. It's only down 13%. Yeah. Hey, even the equal weight is down 10. So the question is, what are you doing in terms of self-preservation on the account? You're looking at a standard MPT, Modern Portfolio Theory, bond protection model, and you really should be sweating about now. That's why we gave it up, because it doesn't work. But if you were on our webinar, you know how our portfolios are structured. And if you weren't on our webinar, there's still time to go watch the replay. You have all week or all month if need be. All you do is go to our website, iriradio.com, and go to the video tab. And the link should be right there. A couple of clicks, and you'll get a link, and you can watch the replay as often as you would like. We covered a lot of the catalyst for current financial problems in the market today. And I do have a bias here, Perry, since I put it together.
A little bit, right? Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. I think it was pretty informative about some of the problems that the market's facing. And these problems are not easily solved. When you look at the energy shortage we have around the world, I mean, one of the critical ones, we don't think of this because most of us drive gasoline cars, some of us drive an electrical or hybrids, but most of us aren't driving diesels. But diesel makes the world go around. Without diesel, there is no commerce, and it starts with the farmer who needs diesel to plant his fields and maintain them and harvest them. And then you need diesel to get them off the field to a processing plant, and from there out to wholesalers and distributors and to the retail store. I mean, there, without diesel, the world doesn't go around anymore.
The commercial world doesn't. I just saw a truck driver online when I was going through, you know, stuff for the show here, and he was talking about how he just filled up his big rig. It cost $1,020 to fill that thing up. And he said, if you don't think that's not affecting the cost of what you're buying, you know, you're kidding yourself. It really does. And that affects it immediately. Those costs are dialed into the cost of that transportation, you know, starting now. So that's a lot more money than it used to cost.
Well, it is. And those costs are going to get passed on. They either get passed on or the guys quit driving trucks.
And let's hope that doesn't happen.
Yeah.
That would be way worse. That would be much worse if they just stopped deliveries altogether. We ought to stop right now, Don. We've got our first break of the afternoon here. Time for us to take a brief break. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have our next market update webinar on the calendar. That's set for June 4th at 9 a.m. And you can register for that by going to iriradio.com. That's iriradio.com. Just head to the webinar page and give that registration link a click, and you'll get a link back. And on June 4th, you just click that link, and you will be live online with us. You'll be able to see the charts that we're looking at, understand a little more about what's going on out there in the market. And we always have plenty of time for any questions that anyone who is online with us has. And we always get a lot of great questions. If you have questions about the market or the economy in general or individual securities that you own, if you want a second opinion, it's a great time to get that done. So again, you can register at iriradio.com. If you'd like to talk to us here this afternoon, we'd love to talk to you. You can give us a call at 800-465-8770. It's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
Live and local, you're listening to Investor Resources. This is your opportunity to call in and have your questions answered. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at iriradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
Mama said there'll be days like this, there'll be days like this.
Yeah, that song. I wish that song said there'd be weeks like this.
Yeah, or months like this.
Months.
It's tough. It is tough out there.
Yeah. So in today's webinar, towards the end, we had a chart of market volatility. And literally, it looks like a roller coaster, except it doesn't have the 360 loop in it.
Everything but.
But it has the highs and the lows and deep, deep drops and big high rises. And when volatility is, there's a normal range of volatility you expect. It's just kind of the negotiation of buyers and sellers and how pressing their need is to exit or their greed is to get into it. And so that causes a little bit of back and forth. But then you get these extreme swings. And what's really driving this isn't individual investors panicking as they did back in 08 and 09. Not yet, anyway.
Right.
Right now, that volatility is being driven by algorithms. It's just, and computers don't think. Computers just do what they're told to do. So if the price moves plus a tenth or a quarter, 3/8 of a point, I mean, it is, if that's a buy signal or a sell signal, the computer places the trade. I mean, and then the likelihood is there's somebody on the other side. And to some extent, there's a domino effect. If you get enough of those at one time, and all of a sudden it cascades. And we've certainly had a number of days like that. With regard to the economy, well, let's see. Let me stay with the volatility for a moment. So the trading that's going on in the market today is primarily algorithms and very large pools of money, which we usually refer to as dark pools, because they don't trade on the New York Exchange. They trade on alternative trading platforms because they move so many shares that if you see them placing trades all the time, it could easily create panic one way or the other, either panic to get out or panic to get in, and exacerbate the trying to find the fair price issue. Price discovery is what it's called. And you get these really big orders, and all of a sudden people start making assumptions that maybe aren't well-founded. So the market looks like it's being manipulated. Yeah, I wouldn't. You know, I'm not going to set out and say it isn't at times.
It can be. It certainly can be. And, Don, we've got a caller on the line. We've got Mike in Lacey has a question about bonds. Mike, you're on the air with Don and Perry. Welcome to the Investor Resources Show.
Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your work. I have a question about the consequences of the government raising interest, its interest rates. And someone said that, well, the government might be calling in its debt, and if the government is calling in its will call in its debt, does that mean it's purchasing bonds and commercial paper that's already out there, and it's purchasing it back, or is it lending at a higher interest rate, or both, or something else?
Well, if the government was going to call in its debt, it would mean it actually had money.
Yeah.
I think so start there. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, let's start there.
Yeah.
So they're going to call in their bonds. So you have an outstanding bond, and what you want is the money for that bond. And so somebody owes you money they haven't been paying, and you call it. So they actually want the money. So they need more money, but what they're going to do is borrow more. The Fed is really the issue, I think, around the point of your question. So for the last decade, the Fed has been creating money on its own digitally. And there was an interview, I think, on CNN or NBC, CBS, and it's one of those financial shows that we used to watch on Sunday nights when that was the only time they had them. And they're interviewing Mr. Powell, and the question was, so you guys don't create money, do you? And Mr. Powell's answer was, yes, we do.
Yeah.
well, how do you do that? Well, it's just a digital entry in our book. So we just make it. And then we use that money to buy treasury bonds from the treasury. And that money and the treasury bonds flow through, I think, 12 major banks that are authorized to handle the treasury's issue. And so those banks, Wall Street banks, end up with cash. And the assumption is they will lend it to borrowers who will then spend it and support the economy. So that has continued to expand to the point that the Fed owns about $9 trillion of government treasuries. And last month they said, we're going to quit doing that as of about a month ago. And then the next 2 weeks afterwards, they went ahead and bought another $55 billion worth of bonds. So that's kind of like my teenage kid of years ago saying, okay, Dad, I'll stay home. And he slips out the back window. I know I told you that's what I was going to do, but I did it anyway. So now we're trying, theoretically, the Fed's going to reverse this process. They aren't going to have to sell all of the bonds. They can let them mature. So the bonds come in for maturity, the interest is paid, the bond is redeemed, and the Fed just gives it back to the Treasury. And they pay a lot of interest to the Treasury over the course of a year after they've paid their expenses and kept their profit. But in any event, that's letting it roll off the books. So that gradually, systematically shrinks their balance sheet, and it does withdraw some liquidity from the market. The question that is on the table is, will they actually begin to sell bonds at a faster rate than the maturity rate? We don't know that. And the other problem is, who in the world, and literally in the world, is at this point an interested buyer in owning more bonds? And if nobody stands up and says, hey, I'll take those, well, then you have to drop the price in order to find a buyer so that the yield is higher. And there is a conundrum that nobody knows the answer to. You have most of the other central banks who have been traditional buyers of bonds own a lot of them. And to some extent, they'll be buyers kind of to maintain relationships with the United States. But there's a limit to how much they can buy without causing problems in their own country. And nobody knows what that limit is. But therein lies the problem of market-driven higher interest rates without the Fed actually having to raise them. And you weren't on the webinar today, I assume.
So, no, I missed it, but I intend to do the next one.
Well, you can watch this one. I mean, it's still relevant. Go to our website, IRIradio.com, and click on the video tab. It'll be right there at the top. But in that, I mentioned that the head of the IMF, on Friday, issued an article that said the Fed didn't do enough. The Fed thinks that they can kill inflation raising rates to about 3%. That's kind of their target schedule right now. The IMF says that rate has to be 5%, and it needs to be done more quickly than the Fed is planning on doing it. So the real question is, if rates rise that fast and global markets start to tank, will the Fed do what they've done in the past and blink? Because they have never followed through on significant reduction in their balance sheet.
So that's not the Jerome Powell Fed. Yeah. Well,
neither did Janet Yellen. She's the only other one who tried it. And as soon as the market, remember December of 18, as soon as that market was down 20%, she quit her program.
Paul Volcker, who just stayed the course and continued to raise the rates regardless of the outcome, because it was necessary for the economy. Right now, Chairman Powell thinks that there are other things that are going to affect inflation, at least as much as the interest rate, you know, getting supply chain squared away again, excess demand drying up, and they're hoping that's going to, you know, cut at least half of the inflation out of the picture for them without them having to deal with it. Is that going to happen? That's another one of those unknowns. We don't know. No one does, including the Fed. So it's going to be interesting to see how that plays out.
Yeah. Well, the Fed's has a lot of thanks for calling, Mike. That was a really good question.
Yep.
I mean, and this is really important in terms of how people are going to manage their portfolios, because most people just take a look at long-term returns and they sit back and say, well, there's nothing else to do. And in fact, our entire company and our webinars are all based on there is something you can do, but you can't do it if you just want to lay back in your recliner and take a nap. That's going to be very painful to do that.
You really do have to not care how much money you lose in the interim. And if you've got a decade to spare and it doesn't matter, no, then good luck to you. I hope it works out well. In the meantime, you don't have to just let the market roll over on you. And when some substantial changes happen, like in the bond market, the returns that you can see with the raising interest rates, you don't have to ignore those. You do if you're just following the pie chart. But if you're not, then there are other things you can do. And we think that's will provide a better outcome going forward.
Okay, well, thank you guys very much, and once again, thanks for all your work. I listen, and I appreciate it.
Thank you, Mike.
Thank you, Mike. Well, that frees up another line. You want to give us a call? Give us a number. Here is the number: 800-465-8770. 800-465-8770. And I guess we're right up another break.
We are. Time to get out of here. I'd like to remind everyone that we do have a weekly email newsletter that gives you an update of the weekly financial news, give you a look at what's important out there, and things that you might not even need to worry about that the talking heads around the world are bringing up. If you'd like to begin receiving that, just send us an email. Send that to help@iriradio.com. That's help@iriradio.com. Just put week in review in the subject line, and then we need your first and last name in the body of the email, and we will get you in the system, and you will begin receiving that on Monday. If you would like to give us a call this afternoon, we'd love to talk to you at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. You are listening to Investor Resources here on AM 770 KTTH. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Hey, well, all right, sir, here we go there, and what are they going to give for? I have a $600 down here, now 10, and now 25, and now 35, and now the 50, now 60, will they give me 60, now 75, 75, another $85 on the bottom there.
Well, stock market's still an auction market, but since Mike from Lacey brought up the subject of bonds, bonds are not an auction market.
Right.
Bonds
right.
are a math market. And he used the term, he asked the question of whether or not the government was going to call its loans in. So there is a call feature on some corporate bonds. I don't know, there might be on some munis. I don't, off the top of my head, I don't know of any or haven't, I can't recall of any. But in a corporate situation, sometimes there is a call feature, which basically says that as the corporation issues the bond, maybe in 2 or 5 years or 10, some period of time shorter than the bond maturity, the company has the right to call the bond. It basically says, we're going to pay this bond off early. As far as the U.S. government's concerned, they don't have any money to pay the bond off early. But
they've never paid a bond yeah. off early or any debt early in their life, I think. So,
yeah. And they can't call them. I mean, when they issue a bond for 30 years, it's 30 years. The part of the problem with the bond situation from the government standpoint, interest rates are rising.
Yep.
And a lot of our government debt over the last 10, maybe 15 years has been refinanced or the new bonds have been issued at shorter term rates, which means they mature more quickly, which means that debt has to be rolled over at a higher interest rate more frequently. That's one of the things Trump was trying to get the Fed to do, which was refinance this stuff in long-term debt
yep.
while it's cheap. If you can get a 30-year rate and 2.5%, why keep this stuff short term when rates rise? All of a sudden, you're going to be paying 4, 5, or 6, and that's exactly where we
are. That's where we are. Yep, happened quick.
So, Mr. Trump, President Trump, really had a good handle from his business experience. You know, you got to do this stuff, and you got to do it now. Not everybody liked his style, but as from a management standpoint, from understanding country security, I mean, he didn't have the political obligations that a lot of politicians have today. And so he just said, he's bull in the china shop. This needs to be done. How do we fix it? No, you get it fixed right now. And people in the government are used to saying, well, no, we'll have a committee and we'll give that some consideration and we'll issue a report on the next biennium. Right.
Right.
In the meantime, we're going to live with a problem.
Meeting adjourned. Yeah, let's get out of here. Yeah, that was it.
You want to talk to us? We have an open phone line, 800-465-8770, 800-465-8770. And if you just joined us, you missed our announcement at the beginning of the show. Beginning June 4th, which is our next stock market webinar update, you can register for that now on our website, iriradio.com. But on that same day, shortly after the webinar is over, we will be on the air at 11 a.m. We're going to be on in the morning at 11 a.m. as of June 4th. So you won't have to miss out because you've got something to do, pulling weeds in the garden or mowing the lawn. we had started to talk about Amazon.
We got a couple callers backed up here too, Dom.
We've got a couple more that came in. We'll forget about Amazon
for the time being. We can start with Frank's up first. Frank first wants to know when today's webinar will be posted, which is now. It's on the website right now. Just go to the website. Go to iriradio.com. Go to the video page, and should be right at the top of the list. Should be the May webinar that you should be able to see that right now, and. Is Frank on? Frank, there we go.
Yes,
hey, Frank,
yes.
Welcome to the show.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Yeah, I appreciate you guys' presentations. There was a slide early in this morning's webinar where Don showed six indicators of market strength. And I caught the first three, but I didn't catch the last three. I got market breadth, trading volume, and corporate bond spreads. Could you quickly remind me what the other three were?
Well, he's expecting me to have a memory that is kind of like
for the Asbury Six. Yeah,
that's okay. I can go through.
I have them right here. Okay, so we have rate of change of the SP of SPX. What's the rate of change for the S&P? And what's the relative performance of high yield bonds versus the stock market? And generally you could use the S&P. So when I do that weekly, I use the junk bond ETF, HYG, and compare it to the S&P 500 SPY. So I use, to do that comparison, I use stockcharts.com. And you can put those two tickers together in your chart, and it will build a graph that is either rising or lowering based on which ticker is actually providing better performance. And then there's money flow in and out of the market. Is the money mostly going in or mostly going out? And you've got the corporate bond spreads. I think you mentioned that. Trading volume on the S&P 500 was the only positive one of the six. And then market breadth, which I think you also mentioned, you got that. Yeah, and now it's five out of six are negative, which means that if you're in the market, you better be pretty confident about what you're doing, because this is an unfriendly environment for most investors. So I'm glad you're on the webinar.
Yes, yes. And one other quick question, if I may. Do you guys know, are there any ETFs that track food commodity prices?
Well, there I know of a couple, one of which is corn, CORN. So it tracks corn, by the way. the problem with investing in that or another one, wheat, and that ticker's WEAT, it's wheat without the H, both of those generate K-1s. So if you buy and sell them like you would another ETF, you can't just report your taxes at the end of the year. You have to wait until they get K-1s issued, because they are tradable partnerships. And not everybody likes having K-1s because it messes with tax returns. There's another one that does not, which isn't specifically food, but it's general agriculture, and it's sponsored by First Trust. And it's a global agriculture fund, and that's FTAG, Frank, Tom, Albert, George. So there's three you can look at. Then there's the index that I showed on one of the other slides. There's a general commodity index, which I believe is a Goldman Sachs. Yeah, it is Goldman Sachs, GSGC.
GSG, right.
And that one also generates a K-1. So from a trading and investor standpoint, GSG, it's a Goldman Sachs commodity index run by iShares. And so that's on the market. It's tradable. But again, I'm just cautioning you that you're going to get delayed tax reporting because of the K-1 requirement.
But you can still just use them for general price levels to see if things are increasing or decreasing.
Which is what we do.
Yes.
Correct. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen.
Thank you, Frank.
Thank you. And we'll look forward to seeing you or at least hearing from you next month on the next webinar. You have a great day. And we have Greg on the line from Mount Vernon. Is he still here?
Hi. Yes, this is Greg.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. Thank you for your show. I was not on your webinar early, so if you've already spoken to this question, I apologize for the redundancy. But in this particular situation where we have a increasing rate environment and stocks and bonds are both down, so there's not really much protection being afforded by bonds for either a long stock portfolio or a long stock and long bond portfolio. I was just wondering, do you all advocate any negative delta strategies to afford some absolute protection for a long stock or a long stock, long bond portfolio?
Well, we use ETFs, exchange-traded funds. Are you familiar with them?
Yes.
Okay. Do you trade options?
Yes.
Okay. Well, we aren't. But if you're in the options market, so our means of defense is to look at some inverse funds. And in one of our portfolios, we own inverse funds. And you can buy inverse funds for bonds and for the broad market indices as well as some of the sectors. And so the issue is for us is we don't use leverage. If you use leverage, there's more choices. But an inverse fund uses derivatives, which uses leverage itself to a degree. So they're higher risk, they have higher expense. And then if you use a leveraged inverse fund, you have magnified the risk issue, which is why we don't use leverage in any of our accounts on anything we do. It takes a sophisticated investor who is going to pay attention, because these are not things that you buy and hold. They are basically intended for one-day trading. And if you own them more than one day, which unleveraged we do, but every day the question is, do I sell this today? Can I afford to hold it overnight, over the weekend? That decision has to be made every day from our view if you own an inverse fund. And if you're using options, you've got different issues to address because you're already highly leveraged most of the time anyway.
And we also don't have any problem just owning cash. We'll own a large cash position just to wait. And we don't ever own cash trying to make anything in cash. If we're in cash, it's because, like you just said, stocks are down, bonds are down, real estate's not looking too good, gold is down. It's just time to be on the sidelines. Wait for some strength to show up somewhere, because it will. It always does. We just don't know when and we don't know where. And so once we're in cash, we're checking every day to see where those trends are firming up, where we may be able to reenter the market. And in the meantime, we're perfectly happy to bide our time in cash and wait for that strength to show up. And that's a good place to just stay out of the way for a little while.
All righty. Thank you, gentlemen. I appreciate your time very much.
Thank you, Greg.
Yeah, you Greg raises an interesting question with regard to what do you do in terms of defense, because generally the mantra from the financial services industry is you just stay invested. You
just write hold it on. Down. That's right. It'll all come back eventually. Don't worry about it. And that's
so you don't want to miss out on the best days of the market is the argument. And if you do miss out on the best days, there is a mathematical argument that you're going to hurt your return. What the industry never wants to calculate is what happens if you miss out on the worst days of the market.
And Don, that is a perfect tease. We have to get out of here for a break. When we come back, we will talk about what happens to your returns if you miss those worst days. And it's significant, let me tell you. In the meantime, we'll get out of here for a quick break. I'd like to remind everyone that we've got our June webinar market update on the calendar. It's going to be Saturday, June 4th at 9 a.m. And you can register for that by going to iriradio.com. Got plenty of time to get your question on the board here. We have a full segment left. If you'd like to talk to us, give us a call at 800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Stay with us. We will be right back.
This is Investor Resources, the program that sheds new light on your investment strategies. The lines are open at 1-800-465-8770. That's 800-465-8770. Or email your question to help at IRIradio.com. That's help at IRIradio.com. Don and Perry will be right back.
I can see clearly now, the rain is gone. I can see all obstacles in my way.
Well, I think we've added some clarity today. Somewhere.
Hopefully, yes. Hopefully. I believe so.
I don't know, Greg, if you're still listening out there, if you send me an email, help@iriradio.com, I'll send you a list of the inverse funds. I have two lists, one leveraged and one plain unleveraged, and just for your own reference so you can look them up. I'll send you copies of those lists, and maybe that'll give you some direction in terms of the what do I do when everything else just stinks, which is kind of where it is.
That's where we are. That's right.
and as Perry said, I mean, we are willing to hold a lot of cash, and we are two of our portfolios and our 401ks are all cash in right now.
100%
in this environment. The issue is what's going up, and does it have any trend? Does it have legs? Is it likely to stay? And we have a set of criteria that we use. We explained the basics of those criteria on today's webinar. And you can watch that webinar. Go to iriradio.com, click on the video tab. And before you get there, on the main page, lower left-hand corner, sign up for next month's webinar. And if you forget about it, you'll get a reminder. And even if you've got a scheduling conflict, we'll send you a replay link, and you'll find out what our view is of whatever's happening at the time. And we kind of jokingly say, we don't know what's going to be covered because we don't usually finish these up until Friday.
It's true.
We finished up today's on Saturday morning. So it's as up to date as we can make them.
One more slide. We're going to add one more slide. So there we go.
We keep looking at this stuff and say, you know, I think this helps people understand what's going on. And that's what we want you to do, because most of the information that comes out in the financial services is regulated by the industry. The compliance officers say to their financial advisors or website programmers, you can't do that. You can't do that.
Not to mention, right now, if you're out there trying to figure out what's going on in the chaos that is the markets right now, it doesn't matter what it is you want to do. Somebody out there is saying that's the right thing to do. Should I sell everything? Yes. Should I buy much more of everything? Yes. And so it doesn't matter what you want to do. There's somebody out there saying that's the right way to go. And how do you know who to listen to? And we can really show you exactly how we step through the process, what it is we're looking at, why we're making the decisions. And that's important because that makes the whole process repeatable. And that's the only way it's going to be okay going forward. If you're listening to anybody who's saying, I've really got a gut feeling about this, I really feel bad about this, here's what we should do now, that's dangerous. That's never a good path to go down.
Well, and it reminds me of a conversation I had this week with a radio listener who had asked me to take a look at their other things they've accumulated and some of the recommendations that their existing advisor had suggested. And one of the things that they had been suggested in trying to deal with their frustration over what's happening to their account was they bought some annuities that had a guaranteed interest rate for 3 years. And they told me that after 3 years, they get their money back and they'll get this higher interest rate. If they stay, the interest rate would be lower. And I said, yeah, I don't think that's the way. Well, so they pulled up their contract, and sure enough, they can't get their money back in 3 years and not have to pay a substantial penalty, which wasn't. Now, it was disclosed in the paperwork that they got. I guarantee you that they signed off somewhere, but it wasn't made clear. And if somebody suggests you buy something, you may think this is a little difficult, but you can figure out whether or not this is for you or for them. If you just simply ask a question, what's your commission in this transaction? No, I don't mean percent. I want to know how many dollars are you getting paid if I buy this? Because that's
fair
a conflict
question.
Of interest.
Yep.
And
question.
You should know. If you sign a real estate agreement to have your house listed, they tell you 5%. You're selling your house for $1 million. Well, you know what 5% of $1 million is. You know how to figure that out. So if they're telling you to put $150 into an annuity, there are very few places you can buy an annuity with no commission. There are a few. I mean, I've referred
Correct.
People to them in the past, but they're hard to find. So ask the question. And I remember a former client years ago, that is go back in the 08 and 09 era, maybe earlier, and they were promised a return and no downside from the stock market. And so I looked at the proposal and I said, so you're going to put $500,000 in here? Yes, we are, because there's no downside. And the agent, 30 days after you get the contract, is going to get a $50,000 check. It's 10% sales charge, first year redemption fee. He gets $50,000, or he gets most of it. That doesn't bother you? No, because I'm not going to lose any money. Well, okay, you're going to lose in $50,000, but it's not going to show in your statement because the insurance company accounting hides that. You want to know whether or not somebody's working for you. You should be writing them a check for your services or having it a bill that's deducted from your account. But you should have a statement that says, here's what we're charging you. Here's how we calculated it, and we're going to deduct it from your account. And if you fire us, you'll get a refund. Now, if that's not what's happening in your account, you don't have a fiduciary working for you. Or you have a fiduciary part-time who, when you're not looking, is a car salesman with a financial product.
Which is even harder for you to deal with. You don't know when they're a fiduciary and when they're not, which is why we're fiduciaries all the time, in every client engagement, for everything we do. And that's something that you can find. Again, it's not necessarily easy to find, but advisors like us are out there, and it's important for you to find one, because that's how you know whoever you're talking to is actually working for you and has your best interest at heart. That's what you need to do. Look for that fiduciary advisor.
It's not just your best interest at heart. It has a duty, a legal duty, to look out for you. And so you clarify that by saying, so how much are you going to charge me? How are you going to give me the invoice? And how do I pay it? And if that's not clear, the odds are you're not dealing with a fiduciary. And that's okay, as long as you understand that you need to have your guard up on every transaction so that you know whether it's really in your best interest or if it's going to qualify for Inner Circle and a trip to some really nice five-star resort.
Those soft dollar returns that advisors get from other people. We don't get paid by anyone else other than our clients. That's another thing that you want to know. Who's paying you? Who else is paying you? And the answer should be no one. No one else is paying you but the clients. That's what we do, and that's what you should be looking for out there.
Yeah, the soft dollars come from free software, free trips, office reimbursement, none of which comes our way. Now, when we were brokers, frankly, those things were fun.
It's kind of fun. Yeah, it is.
But we both reached a point.
They're all gone now, though. Yeah, we don't have any of that.
And we both reached a point independently. Said, you know, this conflict of interest that's just here bothers me, and I'm not going to do it anymore.
Yep.
And so we quit. We left the brokerage business, and we became registered investment advisors and gave up all of our sales licenses. And then in 07, we merged our practices together and have been together operating this company since.
A lot of advisors don't do that. They don't make that transition because they don't want to have to operate as a fiduciary. And we were the opposite. We said that's what we're going to do anyway, so we had to at least get credit for it and operate in an environment that supports that, which is one that we had to create ourselves, because broker-dealers are sales organizations and they're not necessarily looking out for their clients.
And that's what you want in the end. And sometimes the difficulty is, but my advisor's such a nice person.
And they probably are. That's true. Yeah.
They may well be.
Yep.
Or we've been friends since college. He wouldn't do that to me, would he? Probably. Yeah,
he's got a much nicer way of saying it, so it doesn't sound like that, but it is. It is. He's selling you stuff because he needs to, and you're the one that's paying the bill, and it's not reasonable, and we stop doing it.
That's one of my wife's cousin-in-laws, Wells Fargo rep. He and I've had this discussion over time, friendly discussion because we're on opposite sides of the table. But when we've been out of the market, and he says, I could never do that. If I did that, my manager would be sitting on my desk demanding that I put the money into something, because my job is to sell stuff. And I want to make money for the clients, but I have a limited amount of latitude based on firm guidelines. Yeah, so... anyway, that wasn't on our planned subject today, but it's really important for you to understand the relationship that you have with your financial advisor, or the freebie on the website Ain't So Free. We were going to talk about that today. We'll have to probably pick that up next week.
Sure.
If you want to watch today's webinar, it's available by going to our website, iriradio.com. Click on the video link. And you can get a replay real quickly. You want to talk to us during the week, 800-317-9119, 800-317-9119. You want a free opinion on, second opinion on your holdings, send us an email, help@iriradio.com. But our live radio program is about ready to go unlive. We will be back next week, Lord willing. You have a great day. God bless you, your family, and the United States of America. Have a great weekend.